Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. The Medical School HQ Podcast, session number 100.
I swear to fulfill, to the best of my ability and judgment, this covenant. I will respect the hard-won scientific gains of those physicians in whose steps I walk, and gladly share such knowledge as is mine with those who are to follow. I will apply, for the benefit of the sick, all measures which are required, avoiding those twin traps of overtreatment and therapeutic nihilism. I will remember that there is art to medicine as well as science, and that warmth, sympathy, and understanding may outweigh the surgeon's knife or the chemist's drug. I will not be ashamed to say I know not, nor will I fail to call in my colleagues when the skills of another are needed for a patient's recovery. I will respect the privacy of my patients, for their problems are not disclosed to me that the world may know. Most especially must I tread with care in matters of life and death. If it is given me to save a life, all thanks, but it may also be within my power to take a life. This awesome responsibility must be faced with great humbleness and awareness of my own frailty. Above all, I must not play at God. I will remember that I do not treat a fever chart, a cancerous growth, but a sick human being whose illness may affect the person's family and economic stability. My responsibility includes these related problems if I am to care adequately for the sick. I will prevent disease whenever I can, for prevention is preferable to cure. I will remember that I remain a member of society with special obligations to all my fellow human beings, those sound of mind and body, as well as the infirm. If I do not violate this oath, may I enjoy life and art, respected while I live and remembered with affection thereafter. May I always act so as to preserve the finest traditions of my calling, and may I long experience the joy of healing those who seek my help.
Hello and welcome to the Medical School Headquarters podcast, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your pre-med success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help you on your path to becoming a physician. That opening was brought to you by Allison. That is the modern version of the Hippocratic Oath. And if you've listened to a lot of these podcasts, you will know that in episode 50, I also read that same version of the Hippocratic Oath. And I think it's maybe something that we will continue to do if we hit our 50 marks. So the next one would be 150. We'll read it again, maybe.
I like that idea.
Hello, Allison.
Hello, Ryan. Good evening, everyone.
Maybe it's not evening where they are.
That's true. It could be morning, afternoon, or evening. Good afternoon, morning, and evening to everyone.
Hey, catch everybody. There you go. Good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very excited. This is so exciting for us. This is episode 100.
Did you ever think we would get here?
I did, because I believe in you, and I mean that wholeheartedly.
Believe in me or us?
us, but especially you. No, I think it's awesome. I don't know if when you started this, if you thought you would get here.
I don't think I dared think this far ahead. I was happy if you go back and listen to session, was it 7 or 10 or one of those? I was like, hey, we made it to this. It was like a big milestone, because the statistics show that if you make that number of podcasts, then you'll likely continue on. If you don't make that number, then your podcast will likely go away. But the whole reason this podcast has lasted so long is because of you. You that are listening right now, you continue to put us, Allison, myself, our guests that we have onto your devices to listen to us, and put your earbuds in and listen to us while you're driving, listen to us while you're running, listen to us to put you to sleep. Wherever you're listening, it's amazing, and I thank you for that.
As do I.
This podcast, we wanted to take a break and tell your story. And again, if you've been listening over the last couple of weeks, I've reached out to you and have requested stories from you to tell us and tell me and tell everybody else listening your story. And we got 6 amazing stories from different people. 4 of them were able to call them in, so we can play those, and we'll read the other 2. And the whole idea behind doing this, and this idea was brought to us, it's like a sponsorship, brought to us by Jessica, one of our Academy members. And I was actually looking back at session 50, and she also suggested session 50's.
So maybe that's another thing we should make a...
yeah, Jessica, so
every 50
start
episodes.
Thinking about 150.
Thank you, Jessica.
Whatever our theme will be. So it's maybe we should hire her to think about more different episodes.
I know, she's a very busy pre-med, but in all of her extra time.
She's a very, very busy pre-med who just got back awesome MCAT scores.
That's awesome.
Today. Yay. Congratulations, Jessica.
Congratulations.
So... I don't know where to begin. And what I was saying was, we wanted the stories because what we wanted to do with this podcast was not only kind of bring more factual information to you instead of going and reading that 3-letter website form that you go read and you get discouraged that everybody has a 4.0 and a 40 on the MCAT, or Googling around for random questions and answers. We wanted to bring you different experts and admissions committee members and deans and interview pre-med students and medical students and physicians and hear their stories. Because when you take it from an internet page and you talk to somebody, then the stories come to life and you hear more truth, I think, behind it. And you hear the context a lot of what you're reading. And the fact that we have 100 episodes now, you're starting to get a range of stories. And I think that is exactly what we wanted to do here, is to show you that there is no perfect way to be a pre-med. There's no perfect way, 100% guaranteed way, to get into medical school. And I think this episode is fitting for that, to tell many stories and to hear those differences. And ultimately, all 6 of these people will be or are successful on their path already.
Absolutely. These are awesome, awesome stories, awesome people. So thank you for taking time out of your busy lives to write in and share with us about your struggles and successes over those struggles.
So I want to start with Christina's story. And she was the first one, after I put this out, the first one to get back to me. So I thought it was fair to give her the first spot here. So let's go ahead and we will play Christina's.
Hi, Dr. Gray. This is Christina, and I'm calling from California. I wanted to share my story for episode 100. As an undergrad, I considered a career in medicine. I went to a handful of the pre-health meetings, but I think I fell victim to several of the common myths. You know, my GPA wasn't a perfect 4.0. I didn't have the right activities. And if I didn't apply as a junior, I would never, ever get into med school. my research advisor at the time encouraged me to consider grad school. I enjoyed the research that I was doing in his lab, and the idea of applying chemistry to problems in healthcare was intriguing. On top of this, grad school was going to pay me a small stipend. The recession had hit my family and my father's business, so this idea of a small stipend to help my family was really, really exciting. I enjoyed grad school in the university. I passed my qualifying exams. I'm currently in my fourth year of the program, but I felt like something was really missing. I was always less interested in the Nature publications and more interested in hearing clinical cases. So I decided to take a small step, and I took a wilderness medicine class that was being offered through the medical school. And I was just, I couldn't remember the last time I was this excited. I began looking for other resources, knowing that, a PhD to MD path was not super common. And it was during this initial search that I found the podcast and began listening. One of the first episodes that I listened to was episode number 74, the interview with Carrie. She said something very profound in the middle of the interview that kind of named all of the self-doubts I had about my record and my financial worries. Carrie said, "Sometimes we allow fear to formulate speed bumps or walls that aren't really there. Sometimes we think we can't do blank dream because we have all of these other variables that are holding us back. Well, have you ever tried?" So now I'm, as I said, I'm in my fourth year of graduate school. I'm continuing my research, and I'm studying for a January MCAT. And I hope my goal is to be able to apply next summer. So thank you so much again for doing the podcast and presenting all of the information each week. I look forward to listening and learning something new every time.
So that was Christina. What did you think of that?
Ooh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get through this podcast without some actual tears, Ryan Gray. That got me kind of choked up.
It's a Dr. Ryan Gray to you.
Yeah, I know.
Just kidding. I'm totally not like that.
Christina, I mean, what a story. And Carrie, too. I mean, every time I hear that, it's so true. I mean, it's such a powerful thing to say about how we create speed bumps with, you know, our own fears and speed bumps and walls. And are they actually there? Christina, I'm so just moved by how you followed your dream. You knew yourself. You've known yourself this whole time, and you've taken the opportunity to help your family, as you said, by getting that stipend and following what you thought might have been part of your dream at the time. But as you moved through, you sort of clarified for yourself more and more that clinical medicine was really what you wanted to be involved in. And so I just applaud you for sticking to really just continuing to get to know yourself along this journey that we call life, and pursuing your dream, even in the face of these doubts and fears and financial concerns and everything else. So, and the fact that you're now going to be sitting for the MCAT, I mean, just fabulous. So applaud you in all of what you're up to. And we are both confident that, in whether it's a year or a year and a half's time, you will be sitting in a medical school auditorium.
Yeah, it's interesting. Her story, kind of the zig and zag of it all, reminds me of the interview that I did with, and I'm not going to be able to think of her name off the top of my head. It was session 53 with Dahlia. How could I forget that one? And how she took many kind of twists and turns. And so that's session 53. I know Christina mentioned session 74 with Carrie, and we've gotten so much great feedback on that one. So if you're out there doubting yourself right now, go listen to 74 with Carrie, who is starting second year now, maybe on her way to second year.
Yeah. And I think it's so true. I mean, it's the twists and turns in life that make us unique and make us who we are. And so Christina said she got this idea in her head from forums and websites and pre-med advisors, whomever, that
perfect
if you...
Perfect 4.0.
Right.
That's the one thing that stood out in my head.
But
I didn't have the perfect 4.0.
It's funny because what stuck out in my head was if you don't apply as a junior, then you're never going to get an ever. That was also part of it, which is...
Oh, did you? I didn't hear that.
Yeah. And that's what... There's this thought that, yeah, if you don't... I mean, I even encountered that because I did take a gap year. And there are people who tell you, and oh, God, if you don't apply now and you're a junior, then you're done. It's over.
Yeah.
And it's so the opposite. I mean, you certainly can apply as a junior and get in, and that's awesome if you do, but you can absolutely also go the non-traditional route, of course.
Yeah.
So yeah, just very moving. The passion there is just is awesome.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect one to start with. She talked about kind of having that resistance at the beginning and going and finding her path and finding what she's passionate about. And now she's re-engaged and going back at it stronger than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to the next one with Jake. And this one's a little bit longer. So I want to play the whole thing because his story has just as many little gold nuggets as everyone else's.
Hey, Ryan and Allison. This is Jake from Pittsburgh. I am calling to talk about the 100th episode for you. So here's a little bit about my story. My name is Jake Miller, and I am a future physician, and that feels great to say. My route to medicine was definitely not traditional, but through each experience, I learned a lot about myself and the amount of planning necessary not only to pursue medicine, but to get through the application process in one piece. I attended the University of Rochester, which, if you don't know, is a private research-focused institution where about 60% of the incoming students claim that they were interested in medicine their freshman year. During the first week of school, I sat down with my pre-major advisor and discussed my interest in Spanish studies and pursuing medicine. She advised that I would take biology, calculus, and freshman writing, but to hold off on my chemistry because she was concerned that I wouldn't be able to succeed in everything at once. And now as that naive freshman still in orientation, I really had no idea that acting on her advice would change my path to medical school. So at my school, taking biology, chemistry, calculus, and freshman writing was the traditional course, and the traditional route to complete all requirements by your junior year so you could apply and enter medical school right after graduation. So in place of general chemistry, by taking her advice, I then switched that out for a course in public health. I entered as a BS in cell and developmental biology because I really did love AP biology in high school, but then I quickly realized that while biology was important to me as a future doctor, I wasn't passionate about it. And I definitely wasn't passionate about bench research like I was with this newly implemented public health track. So public health, health behavior and society specifically, became my major as I was really captivated by the concepts of health disparities, epidemiology, and medical anthropology. So I declared my major as public health. I took a minor in Spanish and a cluster at my school, which is three courses to fulfill your natural sciences, was biological principles. So throughout college, I was really able to understand the psychosocial aspects of disease, the importance of disease prevention, and how culture changes, how disease and illness is viewed and is cared for. So that's all thanks to my public health degree and courses. So instead of my cramming my pre-med requirements into three different years, I spread them out among all 4 years, and I took chemistry and physics together sophomore year, with genetics and organic chemistry junior year and a biochemistry senior year. And of course, the general bio was all of freshman year. Little did I know this strange sequence of courses, and many times actually there's a fall course and a spring course that have to be taken together, would allow me to do something amazing that a lot of pre-meds don't get to do, which is study abroad. Despite overloading two semesters as well as being a student athlete with a rigorous practice and travel schedule, I really wanted to make this happen. So a Spanish minor, and having a real large interest in Latino health, I had the opportunity to perfect my Spanish language skills while living with an amazing host family in Santiago, Chile, while at the same time continue taking health-related courses and perform clinical rotations through the local university hospital system. These experiences were definitely life-changing and confirmed that medicine was what I wanted to do. So despite my non-traditional pre-med course sequence at the university, and that starting really as a hurdle, it allowed me to do something that I would only have that opportunity once in a lifetime, which is to live abroad for 6 months and to really understand and learn a new culture. My reentry into life in the U.S. was tough that spring. I returned from Chile for my last semester when I would be taking biochem and an MCAT prep course. I was a resident advisor in my hall. I tutored Spanish. I took a four-fold course load while doing all of these things. So reintegrating myself into life was a huge barrier to my success, because I wanted to enjoy life as a second semester senior ready to graduate, spend time with friends I hadn't seen before studying abroad. And it wasn't until final exam time that I really started freaking out about my MCAT. My classes ended, and I had 10 days from when my exams ended until graduation, and then another 10 days until my MCAT from graduation. I really shouldn't have taken my MCAT the very first time, but I did it out of stubbornness, and it left me with a really terrible score in a bad position. I was devastated, but really, I had to step back and analyze my options for moving forward and decided that medicine was still the route I wanted to go and that I needed to take a retake of my MCAT, but that September wouldn't get me a big enough increase, and there was no point because I would have been late in the cycle. Instead, I decided to relax and enjoy my summer research position and my new and upcoming AmeriCorps program. So I began an AmeriCorps program for my gap year at the end of summer after graduation and studied again for my MCAT in October. So that would be, that's a few months. So I would say that's about 6 months, with my test date being in late March. So a 6 month between when I started and when my test date was. It was tough studying while working full-time, but I made it work, and I believe that focusing on my MCAT as the only academic pursuit was key. To increase my scores, I had to really evaluate what I was doing wrong, so I changed the way I studied by using practice questions as my base while taking all practice tests available, using content review, using question banks, anything I could to supplement my learning. The second time around, I really learned that I needed to understand parts of the system, how they work together to make the system function, and how the changes to one part affected that whole system as a whole. So a vivid memory I have of how I really changed my study habits is how I mastered the kidney for my test. The great news is I increased my score by 5 points, which was definitely key. So after that score increase of 5 points, I was so relieved. I was able to really focus on my AmeriCorps program. My AmeriCorps program focuses on increasing access to healthcare and reducing barriers and disparities of care to underserved populations here in my city. This has been the most amazing experience for me, and actually I'm serving 2 terms and will get over 3,500 hours of medically related volunteer work and service. So not only has AmeriCorps allowed me to build skills for my life as a physician and has made me really comfortable working with diverse individuals, it's brought incredible meaning to my 2 years, and I'm not going to call them gap years, but my 2 bridge years between college and medical school. I'm a youth outreach and care coordinator at a local hospital, and I have 2 projects. The first one is working with a youth-driven advisory board for young people who have experienced difficulty transitioning to adult life and adult health care, and many of these young people have functional or developmental disabilities. And the second thing is I serve as a care coordinator at a drop-in program for youth and young adults who are experiencing homelessness in our city. And so I manage the medical clinics there. I help them obtain insurance. I see, help them see a primary or specialty care provider. I can link them to mental health care and, most importantly, help them find stable housing. It's really been an amazing experience, and I recommend it for anyone who's interested in giving back to their community and finding something really meaningful to do during their years in between graduation and medical school. So I'm currently in application cycles, and I really wanted to make sure that I put my best foot forward, because this is the only time that I want to do this. It's the only time I'll apply. I purposely planned my MCAT for March so I could get my scores in April, research schools that I wanted to apply to based on those scores, write my personal statement also in April, and then start filling out ACOMAS and AMCAS in May, and then submit everything the very first week of June that was possible. Because my school, Rochester, was very competitive. The great news is it did have a committee letter, but because it was so competitive, my GPA was not that high. And as well as a low MCAT score for allopathic schools, I really wanted to make sure that I put my best foot forward and apply as early as possible to overcome any hurdles. Planning is half the battle with this application to medical school, and so I really wanted to make sure that everything was in line and I had all my ducks in a row. So at this time, I am so fortunate to have 2 acceptances to osteopathic medical schools, and I'm really, really excited for the future, because my dreams of becoming a physician are about to come true. Thank you so much. I really appreciate all of your help throughout this process, and I will continue listening to the podcast for hopefully years to come.
Jake, you have Allison over here in tears, I think.
And I'm all welled up.
And did you hear he said years to come? That's a lot of pressure.
Oh, boy.
Rubbing her eyes.
Killing me.
It's allergies, right?
I got something in my eye.
Yeah, that's my excuse. So, Jake, thank you for that message. And I hope you that are listening, listen to all 8.5 minutes of that, because he told so many different stories in that that you can take away so many different thoughts and pieces of encouragement and different ideas on what you can do on your path. And you can see that in the end, he was successful. And congratulations, Jake, for having 2 acceptances now to medical school. And you mentioned there are osteopathic schools, and that, again, if you've listened to me long enough, you know that it doesn't matter. Allopathic, osteopathic, you're going to be a physician, and congratulations on that. What stood out on that one for you, Allison?
A lot, several things. And congratulations. So excited for you and all you've accomplished and all you are going to accomplish. I think the first thing that was just so striking to me is how, you know, Jake talked about how his pre-med advisor gave him advice that completely changed his college career and his life. And initially, it sounded like not great advice because, and for most people, it might not be great advice because medical schools want to see that you can do all those courses at the same time and back to back to back and get in those courses in a timely way so you can apply. But what's so amazing is that that advice then translated into him having this new this course that he would never have taken, the public health class, and that propelled him to then be study in Chile and
send him to Chile.
I mean, and have these life-changing experiences. And also, by the way, the fact that you have such an amazing public health background will only make you a stronger physician every day of your career and your life. So that was so cool to hear about. Also just the fact that he course corrected so much. He kept talking about that, how he would step back and realize that he still wanted to pursue this, but he needed to change what he was doing. And that's something that Ryan has talked about and I've talked about in other podcasts about the importance of always taking a step back and doing this thing called course correction, including, by the way, how he changed the whole way he studied for the MCAT.
Yep.
And we've talked in other podcasts about how it's so much about the questions, not about trying to learn all that content and make, you know, focus on the content. It's about the questions. But we're really, I mean, by all through this, I was just moved and moved and moved. But by the end, I mean, Jake, when you talk about what you're doing now and all the experience you have working with youth in the city where you live and these 3,500 hours you're going to have, I mean, my God.
That's it? 30? That's all?
Oh, it just, that's as a physician, crazy. I mean, it makes me so proud just to think of, you know, you as the future, the next generation of physicians and who will be, you know, really right behind Ryan and myself. And just your just how thoughtful you are and how clearly how caring you are as an individual. And clearly it's, you know, you have done all the right things because here you have 2 beautiful acceptances to medical school. So just congratulations. And yeah. So just thrilled for you.
Yeah.
And so, thank you for sharing that with us. I mean, that's huge to share. He really shared so much of his life story with us.
So. Definitely. So a couple of takeaways from that one. It reminded me of the Jim Carrey movie, Yes Man. Jim Carrey is forced or thinks he's forced to say yes to every opportunity. It sounds like, Jake, that's what you are doing. You're taking every opportunity that's thrown your way and not only taking advantage of it, but thriving in that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that's huge. And you had mentioned that some of these hurdles that you thought have now turned into different opportunities. And that's a huge outlook on life in general is not getting depressed and blue and pissed off and discouraged that something didn't go exactly your way, but you took a step back, you course corrected, figured out how can you take advantage of this situation now and move forward. And that will only serve to make you a better person in life and a better physician in general. And so I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think for all of us and all pre-meds out there, there's a motto that I try to live by that I learned from others. And I think it really applies to the whole pre-med journey and beyond as a physician, because it is a long and hard journey to get there and continue to be there. And there's this whole concept that you can have life happen to you. And then there's a concept that you can create the life you want to live. And I try so hard to live by that second part of it every day. And I think that's what a lot of non-trads and other pre-meds encounters. You know, and I shouldn't say encounter, that's what they do. That's what they have to do. They encounter financial struggles and other roadblocks and low MCAT scores or a lower GPA than they wanted. And they just surmount those obstacles time and time again. So,
yeah.
Awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm going to read one from Gabriel, and he wrote in, he didn't get a chance to call in, but I'm just going to read his story real quick and we'll talk about it. Gabriel says, I hope you and Allison are doing great. I wanted to share my story so far for session 100. Right now, I'm a senior in the University of Puerto Rico and taking the MCAT now since I'll finish my degree in 5 years. The reason for this is what I'll talk about. I graduated with a low GPA, 3.2, from high school and did not get accepted into the human biology major. This motivated me to do anything I could possibly do to change majors at my university because this is what I wanted to study, even if I didn't get into medical school. So I gave it all to get the best grades possible and managed to finish my first year, which was pretty loaded, with a 3.9 GPA and successfully changed majors. I took a good amount of unnecessary courses and now I have to stay an extra semester. Now I'm most likely graduating with a 3.7 GPA, which is pretty good for Puerto Rican schools. This is also something you can talk about whenever. Many people have the misconception that Puerto Rican schools, are considered quote-unquote Caribbean when all four of them are U.S. MD schools. University of Puerto Rico, however, only takes students with very strong ties to Puerto Rico. Also, the huge problem when Puerto Ricans consistently score lower on the MCAT because of the language barrier. Keep at it. You are helping many of us make our dream of becoming physicians come true. Thank you. So that's Gabriel.
That's awesome. Thank you, Gabriel.
So I want to start with what he said at the end. The Puerto Rican schools are U.S. medical schools. Puerto Rico is a territory of the U.S. and
yes,
all of
is.
Those schools are... on the AAMC, I believe they all participate in the AMCAS application. Mm-hmm. So they are normal schools, but as he said, they do have very strong ties to Puerto Rico, as do many state, quote unquote, state schools. So, and also the language barrier thing, the MCAT has historically skewed towards native English speakers. And that's a disappointment. And I've been trying to find one guest to bring on the show who I think it was 21, maybe. She couldn't get over a 21 on her MCAT because she was not a native English speaker. And so she ended up going to a Caribbean medical school. And on step one of the USMLE, she got a letter in the mail that said, "Congratulations, you are the highest scoring person for step one."
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I would love to get a letter like that for anything. But it just goes to show you the MCAT does not prove how good you are as a person. It does not prove how good you are as a pre-med, how good you will be as a medical student, or how good you will be as a physician. It's just the MCAT. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's skewed towards native English speakers. So that's one of the hurdles that you'll have to overcome. So.
But it's also just part of what we talk about is knowing the test, and part of knowing the test is just that the language is written in, really. But there are ways to surmount that obstacle too.
Yep. So that's awesome. So it's always interesting. I don't remember when I went to undergrad and selected my major, if there were requirements for GPAs and stuff.
Yeah, I don't think so. Certainly not. And not in Canadian schools. I mean, I went to, as you know, a lot of you know, I went to university or went to college in Canada, and there weren't. I mean, the only difference there is we had to select our major very early on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he talks about how he graduated with a lower GPA than he wanted, which did, you know, it prevented him from getting the major he wanted. And so then I love how he says, this motivated me to do anything I possibly could to change majors at my university, because that's what he wanted to study. And mm-hmm. and that's exactly what we were just talking about. You know, not being stopped, being unstoppable is really what it takes sometimes. And that's what he's doing.
And there's that kind of cliche saying, it's not how you fall, it's how you get up. So he got up very, very strongly.
Yep, absolutely.
So that's awesome.
And who cares if it's a cliche, if it works?
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
So that's that one. Thank you, Gabrielle, for sending that in and sharing your story. And I'm glad you're going along the ride with us. So the next one is Jackson, and I'll play that one now.
Hey, Ryan. This is Jackson. Deleting the message for my story. For the 100th podcast. I'm excited for it. All right. So my first interest in medicine began in high school. I actually worked with my dad, and my dad is actually a funeral director. And so I got my first experience there. I thought anatomy was a beautiful thing, and it definitely is. And I was exposed to that at especially a young age. And I was really interested in that. But going through high school, I became really gifted with math and science. And so I thought I'd pursue a more math-related thing with actuarial science, doing risk analysis and insurance and other things. But after a year of those courses and general courses as well as actuarial science courses, I wasn't really interested in that sort of application of the math. And so I tried to go a different – I remembered why I liked anatomy and science so much. So began the coursework in chemistry and biology and continued with math. And so I graduated just this last May with an applied math degree with minors in both biology and chemistry. So I was taking, you know, O-Chem and Bio-Chem just alongside all the Bio-Chem majors and chemistry majors and as well as biology majors in the biology classes and taking all my upper-level applied math classes. And that was very fulfilling, but also very challenging course load. And what I really liked was the application of math. I found the research that I could do with math was amazing. So what math can do is run simulations. So we can, for example, my research was to model an infant brain and skull in the first 2 years of growth, because that's the most robust period of growth for a child's head. So
our initial goal was to just get an idea for how the brain is affected by craniosynostosis, where we can look at the pressures inside the head, which we really can't do. I think we can do it now with fMRIs, I think, but mathematically investigate this condition. And I really like that ClinQuest application. So I worked on the project for 2 years, and I really enjoyed that application of math for medicine, almost in a diagnostic sense. And I also applied math and immunology and biochemistry. In addition to that coursework, I volunteered in an emergency department for 2.5 years on Saturday nights. Really interesting stuff there. And picked up hospice volunteering my senior year, and I've continued to do that and will continue to do that over the next year. So because of these experiences, my research and my patient contact, I applied to MD-PhD seeking schools with computational biology or other related programs. But these programs are fairly new and growing very rapidly and very diverse. And so my application was limited to some big-name schools, and I ended up with a rejection letter from each of them. So I decided to pursue an advanced degree in computational biology to pursue that research interest. But I really like the patient aspect of it. So I'm continuing to volunteer in hospice, and I have a year and a half left of my master's degree. And I was just recently hired as an emergency room scribe. And so I'm hoping with those experiences and another round of applications under my belt, I'll be successful this time around. Thank you very much, Ryan. And I look forward to all the info from medical school headquarters and everything and all the other information that you pass on. So thank you very much. Bye now.
So that was Jackson.
Jackson. Awesome.
Telling his story.
And so I love these stories because they're so interesting. Everybody is so interesting.
That's the other important thing to realize here is...
Yes,
is
you are interesting.
Is that you get so caught up... You listening right now, you get so caught up, and we all do, we get so caught up in GPA and MCAT, GPA and MCAT, research hours, volunteer hours, shadowing hours. Am I good enough? And what am I going to write about on my personal statement? I'm not unique. Yet you've heard all of these stories and everybody is telling something so unique that you are a fool if you don't think there's something unique about you.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think that's why it takes some soul searching to just step back away from all of those checkboxes and just say, what makes me me? How am I unique? What would I bring to bear in a medical school class that nobody else would? And you can answer that question because everybody out there, you are unique.
Yeah. And think about that question because it will get asked to you during an interview at medical school. A lot of medical schools will ask you, why should we accept you? What will you bring to our incoming class?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, Jackson, your first comment about your dad being a funeral director and anatomy exposure at such a young age. I mean, if I were an admissions officer, I would be so intrigued immediately thinking, my goodness, you know, what is that like? I mean, I remember watching 6 Feet Under and thinking, geez, it's tough stuff. So you were exposed at a young age. And it's so interesting how some of us, we take sort of pieces of what our family members do or what our parents do. And, you know, they talk about the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But it's, you know, so your dad's a funeral director and here you are wanting to pursue medicine and you have that interest in anatomy. So it's just so interesting to me. And then when you talked about the infant brain and skull, you had me hooked, of course, of course.
Nerd.
Well, also because we have an infant. But yeah, I mean, and I've seen some cases of craniosynostosis, and it's so interesting how you applied your math background to that and how you're continuing through all of these parts of your journey to you're continuing to hold on to that interest in clinical medicine and the volunteering experience that you continue to accumulate. So just really inspiring. And your new position now as an ED scribe, I think will be huge. We've talked about that with other pre-meds who have greatly enjoyed being a scribe in the ER. And things move, I should say ED, things move very fast in the emergency department in a lot of hospitals. And so you will meet so many patients and learn so much just by doing that, by writing down those encounters and helping the physician or healthcare practitioner, whoever is seeing the patient, do the diagnostic work and talk with the patient. So write them down. Write down whatever you see.
Definitely. So it's interesting. I want Jackson to email us and let us know if 6 Feet Under was like his life.
Yeah, definitely. I know we did the Mythbusters about medical school and shows on TV. So
I've never met anybody that's kind of grown up in a funeral home.
I haven't either. But you know, the schools that you talked about, these programs where they incorporate math, I mean, it also points to the fact that medicine is changing and the degree programs are changing. There are a lot of students out there who are now doing MD MBAs, which is very different than things used to be. MD PhD has been around for a long time, certainly. Yep, MD MPH. Yeah. So it's very cool. I'd be interested also to know which institutions have these programs available. I'm sure they will increase in the future.
So I want to give some advice to Jackson. This will turn this into a little advising session. If those programs are so few and far between, and this is what you want to do, and you go through another round of applying and hopefully you get in this next round and this advice isn't needed. But if there's a hang up there, apply to medical school. Just straight up MD program. Get into medical school and then get your PhD afterwards. Once you have that MD, so many other doors will be open for you. And you can go and practice as an MD PhD doing what you want to do. The downfall of that is most MD PhD programs are free. They pay you the stipend to be a little research scientist.
Mm.
So that's a huge difference there, and maybe that's what he's pushing for. But that's awesome.
Yeah.
Amazing story to take his love of math and he's a huge science nerd and kind of merged those. And you hear that typical, well, why are you interested in medicine? It's like, well, I love chemistry or I love biology, but he's actually taking that math background and applying it to the
math
science
and anatomy.
Nerd.
Yeah. 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 Definitely.
That's awesome.
Very cool.
So you have one that you're going to read from our friend David, who used to be called the ninth grade high schooler. He's now in 10th grade. And this is another long one. And we were thinking about editing this a little bit, but once we started reading it, we realized we have to read it whole.
Yeah.
So.
And editing only for time's sake, but it is so, I mean, I kept saying to Ryan, he was having me go through and see if we could take pieces of it. I said, Ryan, this is just so great. We just have to read this.
Yeah. So go ahead.
All right. So tune in. Okay. So David starts by saying, when I was a toddler, a family friend from out of state was a pre-med at that time. She is now a pediatric hospitalist, and she used to play with me, examine me as her little standardized patient. And she let me play with her really fun pen light. When I was a little kid, somewhere around 4 years old, I had my well child checkup at my pediatrician's office. Afterwards, I told my mom that I wanted to be just like him. I really liked him. I never cried when I got shots, and he always gave me a good little patient certificate for Pizza Hut or McDonald's. My mom is pretty crafty, and she created a doctor button for me to wear when I played doctor at home with my toy doctor kit. My mom had some health problems that were not getting resolved, and I would tell her, Mommy, I want to be a doctor one day so I can fix you. As I grew older, I went through a short time of wanting to be a farmer and a teacher. In the fourth grade, I read a children's version of Dr. Ben Carson's biography and decided I wanted to become a surgeon. But I wasn't sure I wanted to operate on brains because if I made a wrong move, I could not really fix it and allow the patient much hope for a normal cognitive life. Whereas if I practiced colorectal surgery, which I have pondered, and made a wrong move, I could probably save the patient by performing a colectomy or an ileostomy. While not the optimal surgical result, the patient would be alive and would be able to live a normal daily life. But neurosurgery doesn't have such an easy fix and seems way more complex than I like. Fast forward to 2012, my mom's health issues continued and led her up to Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. Her doctor there was awesome, and he took time to show me how he did his dictation and why he did it that way. I also got a lot of other educational moments while we were staying up at Mayo, and it was amazing how things move along there and were so well organized. We met several people there, and one of the highlights for me was when we changed hotel rooms, we got to be on the same floor that the medical students live on. It was pretty neat. That same year, I decided to look and see what was offered in my area for high school students interested in medicine. I found a medical school program for teens, but I did not fit the qualifications due to residency requirements. After talking with my mom, we decided to contact the doctor about the program. I began emailing him in May, and he got back with me saying, I don't know of any other programs such as our pipeline preparatory one. Your aspirations are laudable, and you're asking all the right questions at this time. Please check back with me later this year. While awaiting a response, I decided to keep digging around and doing internet searches. I spent time watching surgery videos on YouTube, and I found the Medical School HQ podcast that summer, and I loved it. I listened all the way back to session one. Your podcast got me motivated to look around my local area for volunteering opportunities. I found one at a local hospital pushing a cart around to patient rooms, offering up magazines and newspapers to read. I called HR and asked for more details about the position, filled out the application, and got an interview the same week. They were ready to jump on me. Mind you, I was 12 years old at the time, but the application never asked age or birth date. The phone rang and my mom answered. The HR person asked for me and my mom said, he's playing outside with his friends. Can I help you? The woman on the other end was completely shocked to find out that I was a 12-year-old child, that I had made a phone call about volunteering and that I had actually filled out the application neatly and mailed it back in. Needless to say, my application was not accepted. This happened time and time again this summer and never had any luck, but I never got down about it either. I just kept reading books on medicine and listening to your podcasts. I did get a few scraps here and there. I had a colorectal surgeon show me his tools. I have to remember to call them instruments and not tools in front of patients. In September, my mom helped me get into the back door of medicine. One of my favorite school activities, of course, is to go on field trips. We posted on a few groups online asking if there were any other teens interested in medicine. We found a group of about a dozen teens, and my mom contacted the local medical school. They set up an all-day trip to what they call the medical mall, two hospitals, cancer institute, medical school, and a few miscellaneous doctors. One doctor whom I spoke with was the same one I had been emailing since May about the high school medical program. That was pretty exciting to finally get to meet him in person. I respect the fact that he never treated me like a little kid bugging him. He always had an encouraging word for me and still does. I found, sadly, that not all doctors are like this. During his talk, he introduced us to the Physician Pipeline Preparatory Program, or P4. He announced that to us that they had opened it up for us to apply. The doctor over the program did talk with my mom and I extensively about his concerns regarding my age and the distance we live from the medical school. It would be a 2+ hour drive for us each day, along with my mom being stuck in the city during the hours I was in class. He finally conceded and decided to accept my application. The P4 program is an abbreviated medical school program for high school students. There are GPA guidelines, citizenship, extracurricular requirements, and more. Podcast number 38 came in very handy because I had to write an essay, get reference letters, and had to sit before a panel of 3 people for an interview. Even 4, he says. That was a bit scary for a 13-year-old. Podcast 19 came in handy here, too. I think that it also helped that I had some experience with talking to medical professionals, and I basically figured what do I have to lose? They will either take me seriously or treat me like a little kid. I was only 13 as a high school freshman, while most of the other applicants were 14 or 15 years old. In November 2013, I got my acceptance letter saying that I had a seat in the program and was invited to a white coat ceremony. The program lasts for all 4 years of high school. A scholarship if offered with graduation from the program, with continued follow-up throughout the undergrad years. Once a certain score is achieved on the MCAT, admittance to that medical school may be achieved. The first class to graduate the program are currently in their sophomore year of undergrad, so they will take the MCAT in 2015. The P4 meets 3 times per school year for 2-week modules. We get a full meal each day. He says, you med students, they will come for food. We listened to lectures on biochem. I actually just ran into one of the med students while in the ER when my grandmother was being treated, and he warned me that he was going to hit us hard this fall with the biochem lesson. We have had speakers come from HR regarding professionalism and networking in medicine, learned how to present an elevator speech, doctors from specialties. We've gotten hands-on training in the professional development labs, tours, lectures on medical terminology. We learn through problem-based learning. We have learning issues for homework and research diagnoses and drugs and tests to order for our cases. I think one of my favorite things is the standardized patients. This last time, they really surprised us. The medical students did not go into the rooms with us. The med students asked if we had our stethoscopes and then walked away. 2 P4 students went into each of the patient rooms and took care of the standardized patients. My partner and I started off on the wrong foot by forgetting to grab the patient chart before entering the room. Even though it was pretend, I was very nervous, and it really made me think about the seriousness of being in control of a patient's care. That patient's outcome was dependent on what I did, what I ordered, and what conclusions I drew. I think I was scared for myself and for the patient, laugh out loud. The highlight of the year was taking the longitudinal performance assessment exam. This exam is given to the actual medical school students and the P4 high school students. We take this exam each year for the 4 years, and it's neat to see our results up against the actual medical school student results. The P4 program as a whole has been a springboard for me, especially the man who spoke about professionalism and networking, though I must give credit to you and Mrs. Dr. Gray because you have also cheered me on through emails and an occasional shout out on the podcast. Your podcasts have some great ideas like number 52, getting a mentor. Who knew that there really are people out there in medicine that can take a 13-year-old seriously? Through all these different experiences I have had, I've become more comfortable speaking with medical professionals, making phone calls, writing thank you notes, and as I said above, learning that people can either take me seriously or treat me like a little kid. I just figure I can always come back next year and ask again when I'm older. I've gotten a few other cool opportunities as a teenager interested in medicine. I was invited to Chicago to hear my hero, Dr. Ben Carson, retired pediatric neurosurgeon from Johns Hopkins, speak. I got to meet him and get his autograph. A doctor that spoke at the P4 allowed me to watch a brain cutting in the morgue, and he took me around the clinic to introduce me to others, including PhDs in the research labs. Many took my business card and were interested in having me come shadow them in the future. At times, I did run into issues with HR telling me that this or that would not be possible. It was really hard not to get down about this because the people seemed genuinely interested in allowing me to spend time with them. I figured, what could it hurt? I was still coming up short of my desire to gain more hands-on experience with patient care. As you say on the podcast, get close enough to smell the patient. I've since gotten to smell a few patients and now understand the idea behind longer stethoscopes. I was finding that other teens interested in medicine were unable to gain experiences due to HIPAA and insurance issues. As I thought more about this, I thought, why not let teens have some job shadowing opportunities before they spend top dollar getting an education heavy on the sciences and realizing I don't like to be around sick people. Using my experience in 4-H, I came up with the idea for creating a 4-H spin club back in February 2014. I got some ideas down on paper, then contacted a fellow P4 student and ran my ideas past her. We sat down, made out a plan of what we wanted to accomplish this year, and contacted 4-H about getting permission to start a club. We are both in charge of getting speakers and activities lined up each month, as well as running the meetings. My mom is the facilitator. From what I've been told, this is the only 4-H medical spin club in the country. The club I started on medicine focuses on careers in medicine. what education is needed for different areas of medicine, online resources, and we have speakers come, some with hands-on activities for us. This week, we are taking a field trip to a prosthetic and orthotic factory as one of the club members is interested in this field. We have toured the medical school, family medicine clinic, PTOT rehab center, and a hospital. We are currently working on a community service project collecting supplies to make first aid kits to give to patients that come to a free medical clinic. The P4 program has been a great launching pad for me, and I have a desire to help other teens find out if medicine is the right path for them by allowing them to have opportunities to sit down and talk with those already working in the medical and related fields. This is what I want to accomplish for the members of our club. I am so grateful to the medical professionals who have taken time out of their busy schedules and family time to meet with our club. While I was trying to gain interest in the spin club, I had given several newspaper interviews and had posted information on the internet regarding the club. A physician's assistant that is the director of a free medical clinic along with a primary care doctor asked if we would be interested in some of the teens volunteering and getting firsthand experience of being in a direct patient care environment. Did they have to ask me twice? Nope. As of May, I have been working with two family medicine doctors and a physician assistant that works in neurosurgery. I am a provider's assistant and I get to see patients with them and have had some hands-on experiences. Of course, I'm not making any medical decisions, but I do get to ask questions and give input on what I think should be done treatment-wise, outside of the exam room, of course. Then they will explain why or why not my ideas are the way to go. Sometimes they will give me things to work on at home until we meet again. This month, I am working on learning the neurological exam, woohoo, and cranial facial nerves. I think my family is getting tired of me practicing on them. I like when I see some of the repeat patients and they give me a big smile when they see me. I feel like I'm getting an awesome deal at the clinic. I get hands-on experience and get to cheer up the patients, some of whom have very serious illnesses and difficult lives that have brought them to the clinic. I have learned to spin blood and have gotten to see a bit of alternative medicine with acupuncture being done on a few of the patients in addition to evidence-based medicine being practiced. One night in particular stands out in my mind. We were short on nurses and the PA at the free clinic asked me if I knew how to run a computer. I said yes. And next thing I know, he's having me enter in the patient information. The other P4 student was asked if she knew how to do vitals. She did, and her night was spent taking H&H and vitals in the patient rooms. I think it was through building relationships with these providers, showing up on time, dressing appropriately, asking questions, taking my learning issues from the clinic setting and studying up on them for the next clinic time, as well as researching medications and coming back with follow-up questions as to how and why they prescribe certain meds that have contraindications. I am learning how the benefits sometimes outweigh the risks. I've been working on my elevator speech and how I need to explain who I am in a short time span, all of which made me think about the 4-H Medical Spin Club and people needing to know who we are and what we are all about. So I wrote a mission statement. I never really had time to use it on anyone until an ED doctor came to speak to the club. To my surprise, he asked what our club's mission statement was. I also used my elevator speech on a local attorney who is heading up a town revitalization program. He has invited me to speak at the next town meeting about my accomplishments so far as a teen. This summer, I was invited with a few other P4 students to take part in training physicians from other areas of the country in the use of problem-based learning. I looked at this as a chance to teach as well as meet and network with doctors from other areas. I also attended a molecular and cellular biology academy at U of I. That was pretty neat to put to use. It was pretty neat to put to use what I had learned in biology class as well as to be in a laboratory research arena. Then while we were on vacation, I had a chance meeting with Dr. David Menton, PhD, a retired professor at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. He is still on that school's admissions committee. He took time out of his busy schedule to spend time talking to me about high school coursework, undergrad options, and the medical school process and interview. Also, while traveling on vacation, I came across Ralph Lindstra, the Dean of the School of Health Sciences at Liberty University in Virginia. Liberty just started up a new medical school this fall. I think without your podcast and the P4 program, I would never have had the courage to walk up to these men, give them my business card, and start talking with them. That courage, your podcast, the P4, and my business cards all allowed me to network and market myself as a 13 to 14-year-old. My most recent medical experience came in the way of my grandmother and father being patients in the hospital setting. I got to see a number of medical tests performed on my grandmother as well as had several specialists pimp me during her stay. They were nice about it and I enjoyed it. My father lost part of his finger in a machine and he had to have a revision amputation. A PGY3 and PGY1 from plastic surgery allowed me to stay and watch. They had me sitting at first as the doctors explained about his own father's chainsaw accident and how he did not do well watching that hand repair. Once they saw that I was fine, they asked me to come get a closer look. They explained what they were doing. The doctor joked and asked me if I wanted to try my hand at closing. I can't wait for that day to come. It was hard to see my father being worked on. He experienced low blood pressure and a few other issues during the procedure, but it was also really neat to see the before and after. Sadly, they could not reattach the part that was torn off and they had to remove the smashed bone as well. The doctors told me to make sure to come back so that they could show me how to remove the stitches. Through my different activities, experiences, and opportunities in the P4 program, as well as my spending time in the hospital setting, I've met a lot of people. The medical school is connected with two local teaching hospitals, and anytime I am there, I seem to run into people that I know that know me. Just this week, I ran into an ED doctor that I had met earlier in the month who told me that he would go through his medical school textbooks and pick some out for me and mail them to me. I think for teens struggling to find their way into medical experiences, I would say, don't give up. Keep on pushing. Be persistent, but be polite. I have learned to speak up and to not be embarrassed to ask questions, especially in the professional setting. I think that when professionals meet a teen who has a plan, has goals and ambition, they take notice. Teens, look to your own family experiences. Does anyone have a medical condition that could that you could research? Or do you have a family member who could use some assistance with daily care? I help with a lot of my grandmother's care, and I will speak up when doctors ask her questions and she does not know the answer. Or if they use a medical term that she does not understand, I will restate it in an easier to understand way. Work on getting used to professionals looking at you like a kid. If I got sidetracked by every bump in my journey, I would not be where I am today. People expect teens to be goofing around and out for just a good time. It has taken me a lot of time, effort, emails, phone calls, and waiting around to show them that I am serious, dependable, and willing to put forth hard work at a young age. Should I be penalized as a teenager for having a passion outside of playing video games or hanging out at the mall? I think my experiences will give me somewhat of an advantage in med school and residency. I will have already had a lot of patient contact, spent a lot of time interacting with medical professionals, and be more relaxed in the medical setting, allowing me the ability to focus on the bookwork of medical school and not the awkwardness of learning patient contact and dealing with the different personalities and temperaments of medical professionals. Thank you. David Bruns.
Wow. That was long.
Yeah.
And amazing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So he talked in here about so many different things. And he kept mentioning, as a high school student, I did this. And as a high school student, I did that. Remove the high school student and apply this to a college student looking to get shadowing, looking to get clinical experience. Put it on a medical student. And he talks about dependability and showing up on time and dressing appropriately and being professional. That carries throughout your whole medical career. And this kid, and I'll say he's a kid, he's mastering it at 14 years old.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. David, you are just amazing. You already know so much about just some of the key features of what it takes to be a great physician. And it's so clear. I mean, you are so beyond dedicated. Dedicated just doesn't cut it. I mean, your ambition, your persistence is just admirable.
And I think that's amazing. Something that everybody can learn a little bit from is that persistence. He talks about sending lots of emails, and he's obviously gotten a lot of rejection because of his age. And what did he say? He's like, I'll come back next year.
Exactly.
Another year older.
Yeah. And what can it hurt to ask?
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And what 14-year-old has business cards?
I know. I love that. And I love his sense of humor. David, you have such a great sense of humor about all of it, too. It's so clear in hearing what you said and reading it, how much you care and how much you want to help other people and help take care of people and help make them healthier and help cure illness and put people's fingers back together and all these things that you talked about. And so it's so clear that you care. It's so clear how persistent you are and how motivated and how you have your eye on the ball at every single moment of your day. And not only, by the way, have you taken advantage of, in a good way, reaching out to people and using your resources so powerfully, but you've also created things that didn't even exist before. So the 4-H Spin Club, the Medical Spin Club that you created, I mean, just amazing. So I think you will floor admissions committees already with everything you've accomplished. And yeah. And you're only, what's the word? The only thing you have to do now is just keep going and make sure that you do well in your classes in MCAT, but you're going to be passing with flying colors at the rate you're going.
Yeah. If he continues on this path, there's no way he's not getting into medical school. Yep,
no,
wherever he wants
him. No stopping him.
No stopping. Exactly. It's awesome. I love that. So I think we might have to have him on the podcast.
I think so. And I have to give a shout out to his mom. Mo, you are clearly, I just have to say this as a mother to a mother. I mean, you clearly care so much about your son and his passion. And I say that too, because one of the things we've talked about multiple times is how important it is to have that family support. And so, David, you are so, I think, so blessed to have your mom be standing behind you all this way and helping support you from behind the scenes, but also as a facilitator in one of your clubs. And so congratulations to both of you on just being so motivated and helping each other realize your dreams and just really moving.
Yeah. If you're listening to this and not kicking yourself for different opportunities that you've passed up because you were too scared to ask or got a rejection and too scared to continue to pursue it, then go back and re-listen to that and hear that story again about persistence and dedication and passion, and go do what you want to do. It's possible. All right, we have one more. We have Jessica, our Academy member, who gave us this idea as well as session 50 and who just got her MCAT score back, which was an awesome score. Let's play hers.
Hi, my name is Jessica, and recently I struggled with overextending myself. I finished the majority of my prereqs and decided to take the summer off from classes to study for the MCAT, which I'm taking, or took, September 18th. From listening to your podcast, I've learned that the MCAT is something you really need to take seriously and to study for. So I signed up for a Kaplan class to prep. I was also volunteering 5 hours a week at a hospital to gain clinical exposure. And in addition, I work 30 plus hours per week. In June, I stumbled upon a research opportunity and did not want to pass that up, which was a 10 to 15 hour per week commitment. So that's 50 hours per week with non-MCAT stuff. I also just got engaged and had to begin planning my wedding, which, as you and some of the listeners I'm sure know, takes time and many things need to be done a year or so in advance. My sister's also getting married at the end of September, and I'm her maid of honor, so I had scheduled a trip back to New York in early July to throw her a bridal shower / bachelorette party. So that was more time out of my schedule. I was a few weeks into the Kaplan course and falling way behind on the assigned work, and had chosen Kaplan because of their additional resources, fully planning to go above and beyond the assignments. And I just didn't have time to devote to it. And when I was home, I was too exhausted to fully concentrate. I knew something had to give. If I continued at the rate I was going, I was not going to be prepared come September. Not only is there a ton of content to be familiar with, but the MCAT is a lot of strategy. And I kind of liken it to running a marathon. I trained to run for a marathon, you know, slowly increasing my mileage. And yes, you strengthen your leg muscles, but you also strengthen your willpower. You learn to power through leg cramps, tight AT bands, and exhaustion. The MCAT's the same. You have to figure out your own strategies. What do you do when you have no clue what the answer is? What should your pacing look like? How do you calm yourself down if you're getting stressed out over a passage? I would never run a marathon without putting the hours in training, and I needed to do the same for the MCAT. So in mid-July, I decided to take a 2-month leave of absence from work. I have some savings to pull from, and my fiance is extremely supportive and willing to help out with some of our bills. So I took the MCAT. I took about 9 practice full-length exams, and did I feel like I still needed more time? Yeah. I don't know if you'll ever feel completely ready, but I think there's always room for improvement. But I think I got a good enough grasp of things to be okay. I don't know. I still haven't found out what I got on it yet. So fingers crossed. But I guess you have several podcasts about the MCAT, number 65, 34, 17, but the one that really comes to mind is session 42 with Dr. Sinkfield and correcting course. And I think everyone's going to veer off course at some point, and whatever that veering is, you know, is kind of specific to your situation. But I think what's most important is to notice when your tires are hitting those box dots, you know, those raised pavement markers that mark lanes, and how to steer back into your lane. So I overextended myself, and that my performance was suffering, and I think, you know, hopefully I caught it all in time, but it's definitely a lesson that I've learned for the future, and definitely something that I'll take with me in med school to kind of know when enough is enough. And ultimately, of course, you don't want your performance to suffer in certain areas of your life. So that's my story. Anyway, I hope it helps, and I will, I guess, listen to you soon. Thanks. Bye.
So, Jessica, thank you for calling in and leaving that story. She said it perfectly again, and it seems to be the guiding theme throughout all of this, and maybe the biggest take home. And she mentioned it specifically, the correcting course. And that was one episode that we did with Dr. Sinkfield about that, is her failing at some point and kind of taking a step back and figuring out what to do. And we talked with Dahlia and her zig and zag into medical school, and Christina mentioned it, and everybody's mentioned this, the hurdles they've had to overcome and what you do when you hit those hurdles.
Yeah. And we all have hurdles, and I think people experience them at different times, but what Jessica is saying here, I totally agree, rings true for all of us. And the fact that she had the wherewithal to realize that something, as she said, she knew something had to give because she had taken on so much. And a lot of us, when we're pre-meds, when we're med students, residents, beyond, as attendings, we are motivated. We're constantly wanting to learn, to do better, to help our patients, to become doctors, whatever stage you're at. And it is like, I mean, she mentioned the MCAT's like running a marathon. This whole journey is like a marathon. So there are points at which we may have overextended ourselves in that rush, that excitement to try to do everything and to get there. And so, but it is a journey. And Ryan and I ran a half marathon. So as she was talking about that, as she was saying tight IT bands, I was thinking back to when my IT bands were tight from running, and it is all about pacing and planning and getting yourself back on course when you realize that you're starting to veer off course. I also have to say, Jessica, I mean, so brave, the fact that you went and took that 2 month leave of absence from work. I think it's scary for a lot of non-traditionals out there who have real financial obligations and kids and mortgages and all sorts of things, debt. I mean, to the idea that you would actually step away from your income and your paycheck to focus solely on something which is in on the path toward your dream of becoming a physician, that takes a lot of courage. So I applaud you for that bravery. And now the beautiful thing is you can step back here and be so excited and pat yourself on the back 100 times because it did pay off and you did do such a great job with the MCAT. So, so excited for you and congratulations. And thank you again for this wonderful idea of having all of you out there call in and write in and share with us these stories and these triumphs that you've had on your journeys, because they are so, I can't even tell you, I mean, as a physician sitting here, having gone through this process myself and now practicing medicine, I'm so moved by all of you. I really am.
Yeah. This is one where I hope physicians out there that are struggling with enjoying practicing medicine come and listen to this and realize the passion that's behind students coming up and nipping at their feet to be the next generation of physicians and one day replace them, and realize that what they're doing, if they're not happy in it right now, that they should realize that they're very lucky to be doing what they're doing.
Absolutely. I firmly believe that listening to all of you can truly have the potential to reignite that passion in physicians who are already practicing, and keep that passion with you on your journey, on this long, hard journey called pre-med. Keep that passion running through your veins, because it will pay off so much when you do get those acceptance letters like Jake is, and when you do get that great MCAT score like Jessica has, all the time, all the while, from when you're younger, like David, you know, through until maybe you're, you know, even 40 or 53, like our friend from that episode way back, who's now, she must be, gosh, I mean, maybe even already graduated or graduating.
I think
soon.
She graduated. Yeah.
Yeah. From med school. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Awesome, awesome.
Well, this has gone on for an hour and 11 minutes.
Wowza.
Yeah, it's our longest episode to date, and I think it was necessary to be long with all those great stories.
Yeah, it's fitting.
Again, episode 100, we could not have done it without you listening. We could not have done it without you sharing our podcast with your friends, with your classmates, with other people that you think will use it. So continue, please, to do that. We are forever indebted to you as you share it. Share it with your pre-med advisors. Share it with whoever you think can listen. If you haven't done so, you can go to medicalschoolhq.net/iTunes and go subscribe. Every time you subscribe or when you subscribe, you'll get this podcast in your iTunes or player of choice every Wednesday, if we're releasing every Wednesday, which we have for the last 100 weeks. It's amazing. 100 in a row. You'll get that podcast free every Wednesday right in your playlist. So go subscribe. I don't have anything else to say, Allison, except thank you for being a co-host on a lot of these episodes.
A co-host? You mean your only co-host?
My only co-host. I know. I'm sorry.
Just kidding. It's been my utmost pleasure and privilege. And thank you. Thank all of you out there for listening to us, and especially Ryan, because he's on more often than me. But and I give him so much credit for sticking with this every week in the face of having all of his other commitments. But I think this is really, between you and me, all of you out there, this is his favorite job.
Oh, we'll see.
And, no, we love you guys.
Thank you to all the guests, too, that have been on, that have shared their stories. So, all right, I think that's it. Session 100 is in the books. 100 down.
Woohoo!
See you for the next 100.